Hey, what's up, Pelicans fans? Welcome to The Bird Rights. My name is Preston Ellis, and I am the host for the new home to all things Pelicans on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Welcome to the new one-stop shop for everything you Boogie and Brow fanatics need. Now, if you like what you're hearing, follow us on Twitter at The Bird Rights. Read our source material at TheBirdRights.com, and most importantly, throw yourself over to iTunes and download every available podcast by searching The Bird Rights NBA Podcast.
This call is being recorded.
Welcome, Pelicans fans. It is I, Travis Tate, and my good buddy Trevor Ritchie joining you for another The Bird Calls podcast. We're here to recap the 128-120 loss that the Pelicans suffered tonight at home against the Golden State Warriors. You know the deal with the Warriors. They have all those great players and all-stars and NBA Finals MVPs. Trevor, what's the big picture takeaway? We couldn't have expected a win out of tonight's game, but is there stuff that you saw tonight that gets you excited for future games? We are only in game number 2, and we play the Lakers in game number 3 on Sunday.
Well, first of all, it's good to be calling in from the beautiful New Orleans, Louisiana. Happy to be able to be at the game and provide some live coverage. Big picture wise, if we're going to go there to start off the podcast, it's a little early for that, Travis, but we'll roll with it. Golden State failed to cover. They were 8.5 point favorites tonight.
Hey, so
that happened. Hey, there's a big picture right there.
Yeah.
I have to eat my words. In the last podcast, I thought it was going to be a massive blowout and came out in the first half, and I'm not sure. I mean, we had a 3-point lead going into halftime. We were up, I think, like 13 at the end of the first quarter. So I'm going to have to eat those words.
Yeah, we were up 21-6, I believe. I think that was our biggest lead. That was in the first half there. We just had guys who came in and made a bunch of shots there for a while, including this guy that his name keeps popping up. For better or for worse, but Jordan Crawford came in and made a couple of big shots. Ian Clark came in, immediately made some shots. I think the Pelicans made 8 out of their first 14 three-pointers.
Did you see the stat on Crawford and Clark? Crawford and Clark in the first half had combined 19 points, were 7 of 7 from the field, and 5 of 5 from the three-point range.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, those guys are shot makers, and that's what they do. That's why they're going to get playing time when guys like, say, Etuan Moore, who was held scoreless tonight in 24 minutes, when he doesn't give you that punch, you kind of look towards both of those guys, Ian Clark and Jordan Crawford. I mean, they're shoot-first guys. They're shooting threes, specifically. I really like Ian Clark. Now that I've gotten to see him a little bit more as a guy who knows where to move around on the floor on offense when he doesn't have the ball in terms of his ability to cut. So I sort of like his chances as a contributor to this team now. Trevor, I know you've been on the Ian Clark train for a long time. Tonight he had 11 points. He made 4 out of 6 shots. He made all 3 of his threes. Tell me about your love for Ian Clark.
I do like Ian Clark. The only thing that I don't like, I'm a big fan of Jordan Crawford too. The one thing that I was talking to you off the air about is that when they are providing you that big offensive spark and they come in the game and they're not missing a shot, yeah, but when that starts to fall off in the second half, you're kind of stuck with a defensive liability. I understand that this is Clark's former team in the Golden State Warriors, so maybe he knows a little bit more defensively that will give him a little bit of advantage, not so much for Jordan Crawford. But, I can't hate on 14 points, and I can't hate on them not missing a shot in the entire first half. So I'm very pleased with how the bench bounced back tonight after an abysmal performance against the Memphis Grizzlies. So it's definitely, I don't believe, a sustainable performance, but we'll take what we can get and roll off this momentum.
Yeah, because we don't need to talk about Ian Clark. We need to talk about Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. Those were the obviously the pillars of the offense tonight. We don't know. This is sort of a strange thing to say on a podcast where you've got the internet available right here at our fingertips, but we're not really sure exactly how many points those guys had. We think maybe AD might have had 35, or maybe he had 32. We think Cousins had 35, maybe. The ESPN stories tell us one thing, but either way, those guys were great tonight. I thought AD specifically was just moving around all over the floor where he needed to be, catching when you need to make the right catch and finish, and other times being able to create. It's interesting to watch him and Cousins play when they grab a defensive rebound and not look for an outlet pass. They just immediately start dribbling the ball up the floor, and that kind of runs into some early offense sometimes.
I mean, there were a few times that DeMarcus got the rebound and told everyone to run.
Yeah.
You know, some of those rotations come in, and he's like, no, go. Like, yeah. Get up the floor. The one thing that I didn't I'm going to bounce off your positivity and just look at the bad side of it, is I thought late in the game when it came to DeMarcus in that point guard role, trying to get deep into the post to AD, I think Golden State started to catch on to that, and they started to double in the post on AD before DeMarcus even looked for the pass. And then at that point, the rest of the offense kind of stalled because the cuts just, you know, weren't there at that point. And I think that kind of stalled what little chance we had at a comeback late.
Yeah, I think the Pelicans were best tonight when they were playing in what the term that that Kerr and other guys have used is like playing in random, where you sort of just are able to, when you get stops, you're able to just fill your lanes and sort of just generate simple offense just by running. And then when things slowed down, it didn't go quite as well for the Pelicans tonight. Tonight was a big night of a lot of, I don't know what I'd call highlight plays or dramatic plays. We had Draymond had a technical foul pretty early, and I thought he probably could have deserved a second, which I've seen him do many times.
In that same sequence?
Yeah, in the same sequence.
I agree. 'Cause
he just continues to yell at refs after he's already given one, and he's able to get away with it. And I'm not sure how that works. I think he does a really good job of just sticking to the facts. And I don't know if he never says the bad words that you're not supposed to say, I think. And that's maybe how he gets away with it. I don't know. But
can I just say that I don't feel as if we turned the tables and that was DeMarcus, that the same respect from the officials would be given.
No.
That's just my opinion.
I agree. And that's just
following
that's just the life of DeMarcus Cousins at this point.
Yeah, following that tech, Gentry was up next. He got teched. In that little exchange, DeMarcus was on the bench at one point and I saw him give Draymond some words I can't repeat on our family-friendly podcast. But
you can check your local NBA Twitter to find out what he said.
Those altercations were fun. I mean, after the game, he said, you know, Draymond's like a brother, so I loved it. And it got a little chippy right there, and you know, that's what we like to see in today's NBA, get back to that.
I love that.
That feel.
And Durant had a really spectacular block on a Drew dunk attempt. Drew, we think, again, because we're not totally positive in the stat accuracy tonight, we think that he had a rough night shooting and may have scored maybe 11 points on 14 shots. Durant had 7 blocks, though. So, I mean, he was just kind of doing his thing, which is now, I guess, dominating on the defensive side of the ball. We had Klay Thompson secured a block kind of third or fourth quarter. I think it was probably fourth quarter that led to a fast break dunk for him that kind of solidified the way the game was going to go tonight. So a lot of big plays. AD took multiple charges on Durant, which I thought was interesting. It looks like he's just so mobile out there in terms of I don't know. It's almost like he's gained quickness. Is that something you're seeing out of AD so far in the first two games?
I definitely see this. I think it was something he came out with tonight. I think he was ready for this game. I think he knew he had to be. I mean, when he hit, he hit a buzzer beater three at the end of the first quarter. I mean, it was hot. He was heavy. He was into it. He was in the zone. I think DeMarcus and Anthony Davis were all night tonight. That was awesome to see. You mentioned Kevin Durant's blocks. I mean, there was one point in the game he lost his shoe and still got two blocks. Like the same sequence with one shoe on. It was ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how that happens. He just the shoe came off. I think he slung it to the Pelicans bench and then just flung his arms around. Really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's an incredible. That's a good call. He's an incredible player.
How many assists do you have, Drew? With I have three.
Oh boy. Well, if you've got three and I've got three, then that comes out to an average of three. So we're going to go with it.
Yeah. Where I was going with that is I have 13 points. I have no idea what's up with NBA, ESPN, or Google stats tonight following this game. But if we go with your 11 points, either way, if we look at my 15-5 theory that I'm going to roll with, it probably won't pertain. Let's go with against playoff teams. I don't think this theory will pertain to teams like the Lakers that we play next. But my theory that we're going to have to expect 15-5 from either Drew Holiday or Etuan Moore to win a ball game. So if we look at, we're down eight, we lose by eight. Drew Holiday has 11 points and three assists. If we get those 4 points, we're down four. We get those two assists. That's at least 4 points, tie ball game.
I think you're right. I think generally I'll expand your idea here even more, is that basically the non-boogie, non-brow starters might have a problem scoring. Dante Cunningham, you would often see him standing behind the three-point line and his defender down in the paint, much more worried about either AD or Cousins. And, you know, if Cunningham does get a clean catch, come down and have time to shoot a three, then the Warriors are just going to live with that. And that's going to be the way that goes. And we are going to find ourselves losing more games to the Warriors. They've beaten us, I believe, 18 out of 19 times. You know, I'm not sure if that includes playoffs. I got that from the Warriors game notes, I guess I'd call them. And so that is a team that we just can't beat. But I mean, nobody can beat them. What are we supposed to do? You know, like,
I mean, everything has to fall your way. I mean, like when Houston won on their home opener, and everything, Draymond had to not play the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, like everything has to fall your way.
Yeah. And there was just incredible shot making at the end of that game. I mean, we weren't in a position like that tonight, except for when we played out of our heads in the first quarter. Anything else you want to say about this game? And then I'll get to our last big picture question for the big picture boys. Well,
I thought that, a lot of those shots in the first half that were just falling in, a few of them were heavily contested, and we just kind of got the luck of the draw. And I think that's part of the issue with the offense that we're seeing now. We're not able to get those guards as open at times as we would like to, because we're running that system with Boogie and AD, guard post roles, and opposing defenses, especially when you have a roster as strong as Golden State, they're just going to pull their wing defender, AKA Kevin Durant or whoever they have, off of, say, Dante and dare him to shoot. That still leaves our guards with a man on them. So we've got to find a way to roll around and relieve some pressure when we're running those sets, to allow some of those guys to get better chances. Now, I'm not trying to make an excuse for Drew Holiday. I know that we're at a lot better place than we were Wednesday night against Memphis as far regarding his performance, but we still need more to make that money worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even think about the money that he's receiving when you look at the numbers that he's provided basically since the Cousins trade happened. At what point do we need to really get worried about the lack of production from Drew when he's been with Cousins? Is this something that we need to look at and start worrying about today? Or is this something that we need to look at and start worrying about in 3 weeks?
You know, actually, I'm going to go with, since it's 12:08 a.m. as we record this right now, I'm going to go with, let's start worrying about it tomorrow if we don't get a performance out of him. And that's going to be against the Lakers. You know, if he can't show up and get us the stat line that we need, and
that's
get us
Lonzo
the win
Ball
that we need, yes, let's start worrying after that point. I didn't want to do that this early in the season, but if we're just going to run a what if we don't get that performance tomorrow at this point, like I said, it is now, sound the alarm. We're going to have to start.
Lonzo Ball has far outperformed Drew thus far this season. He had 29 and 11 and 9 tonight, nearly a triple double.
Oh God!
In his second ever NBA game.
But go ahead and tell our audience who they were playing.
The Suns.
Okay.
However, young veteran Eric Bledsoe is starting point guard for Phoenix, and you know he's got a nice defensive reputation there. So I don't know. Maybe he didn't guard him most of the night or something, but he did do that against probably their best player.
Just something I just thought about. What is up with Tony Allen?
He played about 7 minutes tonight, all in the first half. Is that correct? I don't think he played it all in the second half, did he?
I was so caught up in the game flow and DeMarcus and Anthony taking over that I don't even remember him in the game, to be honest with you.
He was out there for a little bit.
It's kind of something where I feel like we should have valued his defensive presence a little bit more tonight. I really don't know what they're seeing in practice that doesn't lead them to think that. I'm going to hope that they know more about basketball than I do. And they do.
Trevor, I can assure you that they do.
Yeah, they do. I'm hoping. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I would love to see some Tony Allen, Lonzo Ball action. That's just where I was going with it. Even if it is for 7 minutes, I would love to see it. I think he would love to give it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Just it'd be a repeat of the Patrick Beverley experience from
I was
last
about to
night
say, can Lonzo Ball take two first-team all-defense in his face, like them telling him first-team all-defense? I don't know if he can take it.
And well, apparently he can take it, and then he can dish it out to teams the Phoenix Suns for 29. But yeah, I agree with you. I think we've got to see more from Drew. You know, it's one of those things. I remember when the Heat got together and they had their big three, and as soon as the three gathered, then the story became, well, who's going to be their fourth? And then, you know, now you look at a team like, say, Golden State, and they've got four, and you kind of look at them. I mean, you don't look at them with like an askance eye, but you might say, well, who is their fifth best player? Like, I don't know. Is it Zaza or is it, I guess it's got to be Iggy. But Iggy wasn't even in crunch time tonight. Not that they needed him, but, you know, we got to have that. The New Orleans Pelicans have got to have a third guy because they are proving right now how you can bang your head into a wall time and time again with AD, you know, just going off, just going supernova, basically. And Cousins having a huge night, and you still, you know, we're not nearly as good as Golden State, but I mean, I'm going to imagine that there's going to be a few nights like this when they lose to a team like, say, Minnesota, you know, or Memphis the other night. And that's going to be a problem. So I'll phrase it this way. How important now is that Drew Holiday injury, excuse me, the Rondo injury, because of how it's affected Drew?
I think it's kind of, I think it's almost a good thing if you're taking it for what it's worth and rolling with what you have to, because if we get him in a setting where he's, you know, starting point guard, he's more of the primary ball handler until those rotations start to come in. And we get him to a point within the next 4 to 6 weeks where he gets the aggressive mindset that we want to see him with, then it'll just be a weight lifted off his shoulder when Rondo comes back. So it might almost help. Where I was going to go with what you were saying is, am I crazy to think, hypothetically, because we'll probably never see it, let's say this was a 1-seed, 8-seed matchup in the playoffs, and we had a healthy Solomon Hill and Rondo. Am I crazy to think that this roster would be capable of enough to take 1 or 2 games off of the Golden State Warriors should we have a wing defender and Solomon Hill and Rondo's leadership on the court?
Yeah, I think you're crazy, but only mildly, because we're only talking about one game. And in the playoffs, you never know. AD and Cousins, maybe they'd be able to do it one game, and maybe Draymond gets 2 technicals somehow and gets kicked out of a game. But I see what you're saying. Solomon Hill is at least a better option than anybody else we've got at that position, I think. And I don't say that out of any great love for him, but just because nobody else really fits there. Cunningham seems like he's more of a small ball 4 to me.
But speaking of that,
just a really quick thing. We did send out a lineup tonight that I was going to mention to you, and you were talking about lineups earlier before we started recording. And this is late in the game. Jordan Crawford, Drew, Ian Clark, and then the big 2, meaning that I guess Drew would have been the 3 there. I wish I wasn't looking at who Golden State had out there, but I know they didn't have Iggy. I think they still probably had Zaza in. Is there anything you can make out of those small lineups that we've got that, you know, is that going to win in a situation against Golden State?
It's not going to win if Andre or Kevin Durant is on the floor when we run that, or possibly even, well, I guess Draymond would fall into if we've got AD and Boogie in into that category. So, you know, I don't love it. If we have to run it for, you know, 5 or so minutes, I'm fine with it. If we keep hitting back to Drew, and I think, I mean, he's flying under the radar when it comes to the box score and on the court, but are we being too light on Darius Miller at this point?
Well, he's, you know, first of all, he doesn't come with a $125 million number attached to him.
That's fair.
But even if he didn't, just the sheer lack of experience in the NBA, I mean, he is not a bona fide NBA player right now. We are testing him out. He came over from Germany. You know, I've talked on this podcast before, and many other people have, about kind of what their expectations for him were. Like, oh yeah, it looks like he might start if Dante doesn't re-sign. And that was us being hopeful. I think what we're looking at is much closer to, well, what we're looking at is reality. And that is that, you know, he's just kind of a marginal NBA player. He played 19 minutes. You know, it would be nice, and it would be spectacular for the organization if he could develop into something bigger and better than that. But I mean, as of right now, he's unproven.
But is that you saying that's why you believe, as a, whether it be Twitter or just media or fans in general, that is why we're, you know, not directing a little more criticism his way?
Yeah, I'd say so, because he's not.
Okay.
The main thing is that he doesn't come with the money, and 2, he's basically unproven. So he doesn't. We don't really have any reason to have negative thoughts about him.
Definitely. Yeah. I was just saying that based off of expectation. You know, when you came into the season, where even re-signing Cunningham, there was still talk that he might be the starter, and then we get as little as possible that we could get out of him. So I just didn't know if you know, the knowledgeable fan, that your answer is the obvious response, but I just didn't know if a disappointment when it came to the expectations would lead to any of that skepticism or criticism.
Yeah. What about Dante Cunningham? Did you really see anything out of it? I mean, he is another guy that kind of just, for me, he kind of just floats in and off the screen. I didn't really see a whole lot of what it is that he can give us at his best, other than, you know, making knockdown jump shots. What did you see?
And I mean, that's why we asked this question, because we don't know. We don't even know what he can give us. Therefore, we really don't know what to expect. So on a night like this, we just kind of, you know, we take what he gives us and we go with it, and we don't really say anything. Oh, that was an awful performance, or we need more from him. Because I don't even know if the coaching staff, after having him and him being one of the most consistent players that the Pelicans have had over the last 3 years, as far as being healthy and actually playing in games. I think he's played the most games of anybody on the Pelicans roster over the last 3 years. And we still don't know what to expect from him on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah. Well, what did you see out of Golden State? How do you like their chances? Did you see him play Houston the other night?
I did. I think they still look like the defending championship. They look like they're on the route to win another championship. I think that Caspi injury, I'm sad that I'm even bringing him up in this podcast.
He's quite the source of consternation amongst the bird rights writers.
True. This is truth. You know, he's out. I think the addition of Nick Young was great. I think he's going to fit their – I don't want to say culture, because his attitude really doesn't, but I think if they can hone him in – I mean, he had like 23 points against Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can get guys like that are just knockdown shooters to work in that offense, I think they got stronger, and they've done nothing except for get stronger over the last three seasons. So I'm not sure – I mean, obviously, there's other capable rosters in the league of maybe beating them down once, you know, whoever gets to the Western Conference finals and faces them, which is essentially inevitable, and we're just going to go with it, that the Warriors will be in the Western Conference finals. Not that that's a hot take or anything. It's just crazy that we can just go ahead and put them there. I think whoever makes it there, whether it be probably San Antonio, Houston, or OKC, once Golden State has to run through some of the – I mean, the 7 and 8 seed, you know, Golden State will be the 1 seed. Whoever's the 8 seed is still going to be a really strong team, whether it be, you know, the Trailblazers or the Pelicans or someone. So the Warriors are going to – might get, you know, a little beat up when it comes to some of these top-tier Western teams that might be in the Western Conference Finals, you know, come up and they have to face them. That you might see a little slack. You might see a little wear and tear. I think Steve Kerr does a good job of managing his players. So I'm seeing what you would expect out of the Warriors in the first two games of the season.
Yeah, I totally see just a little bit of chinks in the armor for them. They don't look quite as dynamic this year as compared to other years, but also it's the first two games, and they know that they're in this for the long haul, and they will be playing their best, you know, probably in March, April, May, June. And I would imagine we'll win the title again. But as of right now, I'm not, like, you know, totally blown away. But, you know, the talent is very, very obvious. All right, so one last big picture boys question. We're going to address a question that is league-wide, I guess. And that is, and it's kind of a strangely phrased question. I didn't know how to write this. Trevor, have you noticed that during the first few games of the NBA season, we're seeing more game flow because there are fewer timeouts for coaches and players to take? There's longer, more uninterrupted play. Have you noticed that? And do you like it? So that was a rule that the NBA instituted this summer. And have you noticed it at all?
From a viewer perspective, it does feel as if the game flows a little bit better with that implementation. I feel like the coaches and players, you know, use the timeouts more sparingly because they have to at momentum shift. So it's kind of at more critical points where you're having to make adjustments, and it's not really a breather. You're having to put together, you know, a true sets, and you're asking a little bit more out of your coaches and your players with that. It's fun for the fans during that period. And like I said, it's good for the viewer. The game continues to flow. And I feel like I have noticed that. And I feel like it was the right decision by the NBA.
Yeah, I totally love it. I'm on board. I think I noticed it. I don't know if I noticed it more in tonight's game, but maybe in some of the other games I've seen so far this year, including that season opening Golden State Houston game. I think I first noticed it there, and I remember that was implemented this summer.
We had those technical fouls, and we had a few charges and some blocks and a ton of out-of-bounds plays. So I feel like some of that contributed to not being able to see that as much with how some of those plays slowed the game down.
Yeah, and tonight there was like a strange surge after that. I think it was after the Draymond tech. There was a bunch of back and forth off the ball fouls that were called, and I think the refs were just trying to make a statement there for about four or five possessions, and things eventually got back and rolling. But yeah, anything else you want to say, Trevor? We're gonna try to get out of here. It's 12:24 a.m.
Nope. You can follow me at Richie RitchieTMR. I should have a recap article up soon, and please subscribe, share, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher. I don't know if we're on Stitcher or not. I shouldn't have said that.
I think
Blog
we're on
Talk
Stitcher.
Radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Just however you can rate us. We really need those ratings. We really, I think Preston sent us a message today that we're the 5th most listened to podcast on Blog Talk, basketball podcast
on
Blog Talk Radio right now. So, whatever our audience can do, if you like the podcast, if you don't like the podcast, share it too. Tell people you don't like it. Spread the gospel, and let's get those numbers up.
I love it. Yeah, people got to start rating this thing, man. We're legit. That's top five, man. We're really good. Go find our stories on thebirdrights.com. This has been the Big Picture Boys. It's Trevor, and I'm Travis, and we will talk to you later. Go Pels!
Thanks again, Pelicans fans. Again, you are listening to The Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Find all of our podcasts on iTunes by searching The Bird Rights NBA Podcast. That's right, WRITES. And find our source material at thebirdrights.com. Thanks for listening.